Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Life After Corporate. This podcast is for you if you have made or you're thinking about making the leap from corporate to entrepreneur, and you not only want to replace your income, but you want to make an impact through your work. If that's you, welcome home. There's so much more to launching a business than having a good business head and growing a profitable business with a solution that people will want to buy. Making the leap to entrepreneur not only exposes you to financial risk, but to emotional risk as well. So whatever patterns you have brought with you from your prior life, whether that's perfectionism, procrastination, patterns of self-sabotage, or sometimes feeling like an imposter, these feelings and patterns of being or behaving only get amplified when you're doing something that's a little risky and a little bit scary. Maybe this isn't you right now, but what I have seen over and over again is that when you step out to play an even bigger game, you're likely to run into your inner critic. And I'm so excited to welcome my colleague and friend, Amy Voderick, to Life After Corporate today. Amy is the founder of Insight Edge, a leadership coaching practice based in Canada, and also host of Inside Edge with Amy podcast and co-author of the book, Good Enough, Embrace Who You Are and Release Your Brilliance. Amy is a brilliant coach and leadership expert, and I have learned so much from her, and I know you will walk away with insights too on how you can master your inner game on this road to entrepreneurship. So without further ado, welcome Amy.
Well, thank you. I'm really happy to be here. It's fun to be on your podcast, Deb.
I know. We had podcast switchies.
Yeah, that's right.
I was on yours, now you're on mine.
Yeah, we had such a good conversation when you joined me on my podcast. You had so many good things to say. It was just a delight to have you there. I have had a lot of feedback on that episode. And for your listeners, I invite you to check it out. You'll see it in my listings. And it's, you know, I just had a lot of great feedback, Deb, on how you so brilliantly help women make this leap from corporate into entrepreneurship.
Oh, thank you so much, my friend. I hope I can match your interview skills because you are an expert interviewer, my friend. So that was an excellent podcast for me to record as well. It was so much fun. And, you know, we're both playing in the same sandbox here and realizing things that emerge not only for ourselves, but obviously for our clients who we coach. And before we dive into things like inner critic, imposter syndrome, self-sabotage, and all those delicious topics, first tell us a little bit about what your life after corporate story is. And I say that in quotes because I know you left a healthcare career to pursue your coaching.
Yeah. And that's so funny because I never really thought of healthcare when I was in it as corporate, but it absolutely is. It has structures, processes, policies, and all the things that come with corporate. The difference is, especially here in Canada, is it's, you know, it's essentially a not-for-profit business or enterprise. So yeah, so I had a I call it more of an eclectic path to get here. There was no plan. I'm an accidental entrepreneur, although I've had entrepreneurial tendencies, I think, all of my life. I was one of those, you know, new moms that decided to sell toys or, you know, start a small consulting business while on mat leave. I did all these kind of entrepreneurial things. But I didn't actually launch into starting a business until after my divorce. And that was a moment, as it is for anyone who's gone through a life change like that, where I really took a look at what do I want. And at that time, I was teaching in a university, a full course load, and working part-time in public health as an RN. So I decided, after attending a workshop that I'd been sent to look at my career in academia, that I loved the workshop and I loved the job of the workshop facilitator so much, who happened to be also an executive coach and facilitator, that I followed up with her after and said, I want to do what you do for a living. I don't want to go get a PhD and keep teaching full time. So that was my introduction into the coaching world. Is she kind of put me in touch with coaching and what that was. I had no idea. And I flew away to, newly divorced with four kids at home, I flew off to Colorado and enrolled in a coaching program where I went back and forth three times in 9 months for 5 days each. And it was, you know, it was a crazy time for me to do that. But it just changed everything. It was like, wow, I feel like I've just landed in exactly what I'm meant to do. But then it took me 5 years to really figure out how to do that full time and make an income. So I did the side hustle. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of pro bono. I said yes to any opportunity to coach, facilitate, do a workshop, do a lunch and learn, etc. So it's been an evolution externally in terms of building a business and learning what that is, because I came with no knowledge of business at all other than instincts. And then there was all the internal, which I know we're going to dive into. Mm-hmm. The internal stuff, man.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, that really, I think, is actually what slowed down my ability to grow a business, was navigating all the not good enough stuff that was in the way.
Yeah. So I didn't remember that we shared the whole divorce story as the kicking off point. I mean, I didn't become a coach right away, but I also had a coach and I fell in love with what my coach was doing. And that gave me the idea. And she gave me the idea. She said, you'd be a great coach. And I said, are you crazy? Do you know what I'm going through right now? I can't just give up my job and become a coach. But so let's talk about our own inner journey. You know, for you, when you had the side hustle, what was that pivotal moment when you decided that I'm ready to go full time or most of the time in my coaching practice? When was that moment, and what had you experienced along the way that gave you the confidence that you could now do this?
Yeah, I don't think it was any one moment. I think it was a series of moments. So I recognized that I was feeling antsy, kind of not loving my, I was teaching a lot of courses in an undergraduate nursing program. And I loved the students and the teaching, but it wasn't my zone anymore. I was starting to say, I want to talk to them about things related to coaching and personal development and career development. And it really wasn't in the curriculum. So I started to notice I was wandering off curriculum to work on leadership development skills for up-and-coming professionals. So that was the first kind of clue. And then I just started doing a lot of coaching. Like, I had some colleagues that were coming to me for coaching. I had women that were finding me because I was doing a fair bit of small session speaking for free through a couple of different organizations. And so they were seeking me out to either speak, run a workshop, or for coaching. And then it's kind of serendipitous what happens. I was asked to do a keynote at a conference for mothers and daughters. So a very unique conference idea in the first place, around the myth of perfection. And so that was right up my alley. I had felt entangled in perfection many times in my own life. And so I said, sure. So I'd never done a keynote like that before, but I just said yes. And interestingly enough, before I did that, I was introduced to a woman who ran a women's networking group, and she was starting a mastermind group for women new in business. And so I joined that under the recommendation of a colleague, and I was still teaching. And in the mastermind, the woman who ran the women's networking company, her name is Ann Day, she was the leader of the business newbie group. And so I joined to learn how do I run a business so I could learn it before actually leaving my career and stepping off to start this thing. And it turns out that we met for lunch afterwards because we kind of hit it off. And we left the lunch deciding to write this book called Good Enough, Embrace Who You Are, Unleash Your Brilliance. Of course, the title came after doing all the work for the book. So it was simply a serendipitous moment. It was like two women getting together. We were talking about this experience of not good enough. I was talking about the keynote I was about to do. We just hit it off. And she said, I'm about to write a book. Would you like to write it with me? And that was it. And so that was a pivotal moment because that had me out interviewing. We interviewed over 150 women business owners and leaders and organizations to find out what held them back. And then we did a big survey of 250 women. And it was after that, that it was like, oh, that's it. I love talking and listening to these stories of women. I want to coach with women. I want to do this work. I want to get them through this feeling of not good enough, getting through feeling that they have to have everything perfect before they take action. And that was really the kickstart that I think I believe I left my career in August of the year that the book came out.
And the book came out what month that year?
It came out in March. So I left before the book actually was released. Mm-hmm. And I focused on, you know, finishing the book, picking up lots of coaching clients and speaking gigs wherever I could to make ends meet. And this was not it was a stressful move, but I was prepared to step into it by then because I had a sense that the work I was doing, there was a need for.
Well, there's nothing like doing research to confirm that there's a need for the work that you're going to do. And you did 150 interviews and 250 surveys. So you had a lot of data.
We did. It was a massive undertaking.
Yeah. That's amazing. I mean, so that is such a, you know, I'm a big preacher about doing market research. And that is such a firm foundation to build upon. But the other thing that I want to reflect back to you is that it seems to me, and confirm if this is true, that you are very much driven by your intuition. And for someone to make the moves that you have made throughout your career, there has to be some sort of trust there that you trust your inner voice. Is that true or am I?
No, it is true because again, my career has moved in different ways. I mean, when I started out on my career path, I wanted to be a journalist. That's where I went to university for initially. I wanted to travel and tell human interest stories and show and empower, and in particular, empower women and youth. That was my mission. And then things unfolded differently, and I ended up in nursing, had a wonderful career in peds nursing and then academia. But every time I made a move, there was like this persistent stone in my shoe. I use that phrase a fair bit, where I just couldn't, it was just so irritating that I had to pay attention. And every time I made a move, I would never have said I was going to make that move if I had a plan. Like it would never have fallen on a plan. It just evolved. So oftentimes the move to go from, I worked in peds critical care at, sick kids in Toronto, which is a well-known world-class institution. I loved my job, but through the marital breakdown, I needed to find options that weren't shift work. So that triggered me to take a full-time position in another organization as a leader internally. And that was abysmal, Deb, because I didn't like it. And so that was a precursor for me to be open to listening to someone say, we're looking for professors at the university to teach. And we're looking for someone to do prenatal and parenting classes. I wouldn't have even heard that if I had been content. But because I wasn't content, I listened and I followed up with the conversations and just sort of moved into different spheres. And I think when you talk about wise voice, and I see this with my clients too, right? When you can help them hear that that whisper. I think Oprah calls it the whisper, but the whisper just is persistent, and it just, you go on a walk and it's there. It just comes back to you. You wake up in the morning and it's there. And that's why I kind of call it like the stone in your shoe, because until you stop on the park bench, take the shoe off, shake the stone out, pay attention to what's in your shoe, it's always there. And so I've always paid attention and made moves. And
that's
and,
so interesting. Yeah.
I just want to add one more thing. I didn't mean to cut you off, but the other piece to that, though, is this: I have a deep belief that I will figure things out. So it, that doesn't always work well for me, because it may, sometimes I take risk that then I have to pedal really hard, for instance, around finances, to make sure that I'm going to be okay, because I move too quick sometimes without having the foundation there. So when you talk about market research, I see that now, but when I was doing the book, I did not leverage that to help me grow my business quickly. So just wanted to add that, because I don't want your listeners to think I had this all figured out and it was easy. It wasn't.
No, it's so interesting too, because so often, and what I kept listening for in the patterns and what you were talking about, was there was something that was uncomfortable. And that's what, where the impetus for change comes from. When you recognize something is uncomfortable and you decide that you don't want to live with that discomfort, you know, whether that's your marriage or your job or any situation in your life. And I think too often, women especially are willing to live with discomfort as opposed to turning around and saying, okay, so why do I feel uncomfortable here? Instead of sweeping it under the rug or muscling through it, because that's what you do. You don't stop. You just keep going. So any thoughts on that? I mean, it wasn't where I was intending to go in this conversation today, but you know, it seems like many people don't pay attention to that stone in the shoe.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's my tolerance for hearing myself complain. So when I hear myself complaining, like, oh, I don't want to do this, and I say it too many times, then I just get annoyed with myself. And it's like, okay, well, do something about it then. Stop complaining. So part of it is my own frustration when I hear myself complaining, that that's a clue for me that I need to do something different. It doesn't always mean start a new career or whatever, but it is a clue for me that if I'm persistently, consistently complaining and feeling low energy, that it's time for me to do a really good check-in and see what's happening. There is discomfort in staying complacent. And you know, we can numb ourselves out by, you know, we've all been, I'm sure, finding avenues for numbing during the pandemic when it feels like it's too much and too big or too uncertain. But, you know, numbing out for me is, you know, a lot of television, because I'm not a big TV watcher. But if I catch myself doing a lot, then I know that either something's cooking that I need to take a look at and I'm not looking, or I'm ready to make a change and I haven't done it yet. So that's a clue for me if I'm doing those kinds of things. So the discomfort usually shows up in things to try to make me comfortable that aren't making the decision. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question.
Yeah, no, you've got it. And, you know, for me, it was noticing the sense of duality of being in different places at the same time, you know, mentally or emotionally. Because if you're not listening to your intuition, and instead you're listening to the inner critic, and we can start talking about the inner critic, you're not, in either scenario, you're not in the moment, right? So I remember the time I discovered I was saying one thing, feeling another, and doing something else completely different, right? So, and I want to know, is this normal for women leaders? Is this what's going on for everyone? So what did you find in your research? I'm fascinated by all of this. Where does this I'm not good enough come from? Because it feels like an epidemic.
Yeah, so I think, you know, my thinking around it has evolved the more I've been working with women around what I call the invisible barriers, which are really this, what feed into this master assessment or feeling that we're not enough. We're just not enough, or we're not enough yet, or maybe we're too much. And that's another thing we found, is a fear of being too much. So we found a couple of things that are, you know, were pretty consistent across everyone we talked to. And we really had no problem, by the way, finding women who wanted to be interviewed. That was what was so interesting. We could still be interviewing. We had so many women who wanted to talk about this, which let us know we were onto something. But we found out that, you know, in childhood, the story of childhood led to sort of two, and these are general buckets, by no means, fulsome. But one was messaging that, you know, don't overreach, don't take too many risks. You're not really good enough, or you're not whatever enough. Be careful, be cautious, don't embarrass yourself, don't trip and fall. That was one. The other was, you are fabulous, you shine like a bright star, you can do all of these things, you cannot fail, which also set up this feeling of imposterism or reaching for perfectionism, because they came from that sort of story of childhood. And there was a mix of all in the middle. But childhood absolutely shaped, and I'm sure it's of no surprise to your listeners, our perception of self and what is possible for ourselves and our belief in ourselves as adults. And then the other thing was that the realization that who we want to be in the world isn't static. So if we want to be a fabulous mom, we might have a very narrow interpretation of what that would look like. And it isn't until women realize that they could actually create their own interpretation of a good mother, of a successful career, of whatever, that is what opened them up to break free from feeling not good enough. So if there was a static belief that this is what is, if this is the only way you're good enough, then it really led to a lot of challenge when they wanted to take risk. But when they could realize that it wasn't static and that they could create their own belief about what was possible, then things sort of broke open for them.
So there's really what you're saying is there's two kinds of reasons why we feel not good enough. And one is that we were taught not to embarrass ourselves, which is really our parents saying, don't embarrass me.
Yeah.
Right. It's not about, I'm not going to embarrass myself if I fall down, but if I fall down and you get embarrassed, then that's something else. But, you know, and then the other side is that you can do anything. You're such a bright, shiny object, and then needing to be perfect. And it's so funny because I've been thinking a lot about perfectionism lately. And there are some times when being perfect really works. So whether you're being perfect because you were taught that you have to be perfect, or even the other side of the coin is you're really not good enough, so you have to try harder. There are times when perfectionism really works in our favor, and there are times when it just simply doesn't work. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, I do. And you know, there's times when we want someone to be perfect too. So if I'm going to the dentist, I want as close to perfection as possible, right? But in terms of us as human beings, I think overall, I think perfection drives us in a direction that's unhealthy, because we're looking to attain something that isn't real. And we have a lot of, I mean, this came out in our interviews too, that mass media plays a big role in, if we're not paying attention into the number of messages that we receive that tell us how we should look, how we should dress, what our home should look like, what we should be cooking for dinner, how many kids we should have. All of that can really be very subtle messaging that we receive. And social media played a big role in that too. If women weren't paying attention to how they were feeling when they were engaging in social media, they could find themselves getting caught in comparisonitis, in feeling not good enough, in trying to attain something that maybe they didn't even want, but they were seeing in social. So, I'm not 100% sure where perfection serves us well, other than it, if we interpret it as striving for excellence, as having a bar that inspires us to go for, and it doesn't deplete or erode our sense of self in the process, then I can see it being healthy. But I may have misunderstood what you were saying about perfection.
Well, perfection, well, and maybe it's not perfection. I think it is the striving for excellence that the perfectionist tendencies tend to go for, which means you tend to be promoted, you tend to be noticed. You might put that little bit extra into your work. And maybe people who tend to put that little bit extra into their work tend to be more successful in the corporate world. What I've found in the entrepreneurial space is that need to be perfect means it's probably likely that you'll never launch anything.
Yeah, I was just going to say, all I was saying is like red flashing failure to launch, because yes, that's what happens, right? That's what happens. Yeah, no, for sure. I get what you're saying. Like in the corporate, or for me in the healthcare or academia world, like absolutely, you put in a lot. You know also how to work the system, because you can work really hard, keep your nose down, but not know how to work a system, and so therefore you never get noticed. There are advantages to that. I'm not 100% on the perfection piece. I do think that we put on a mask corporately, right? That this is who we are. We've got it all together. And that also feeds, unfortunately, to feeling like a fake or an imposter too.
Exactly. You know, I remember succeeding up the corporate ladder much higher than I ever expected to go when I was in my early to mid 20s. I really never had any sights on being an executive, but just following my intuition and asking mm-hmm. for things that looked like they were interesting and fun, and following that, I excelled. And then I got to a point where I thought, wow, do they know like who's running this department right now? Do they know that I'm really not qualified for this? And I think that those types of things really get amplified when you are the CEO of your own business, because in the entrepreneurial space, it's like you are creating something out of nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have no idea. I mean, you might have done your market research, right? And you have a sense, and you have some grounding and validation, and that's so important. And I always say to this, I'll let your listeners in on this. I always say to Deb, I wish I had found you when I was starting my business, because you would have saved me a lot of heartache, time, and money. But I didn't. But you know, you can have a lot of validation. I had a lot of validation that what I wanted to offer was of value to the women I wanted to serve, but I didn't have the guts to take the risk at a pace that created revenue fast enough for me. So I held back. As we're talking about perfection, I made sure that everything I said wasn't too risky, that it was, you know, with that, it could go without too much critique or judgment being placed on it. I would spend way too much time on free offers to make sure they were just so. Perfection, it's a real nightmare when you're an entrepreneur, because you need to get out there and try things and fail. And I know we hear that. We hear fail fast, all of that. It is really tough to do, because you have to swallow your fear that you're going to be critiqued, and know and trust yourself that you will be okay if you're critiqued. You will be okay if you fall face down in the mud, because you know how to pick yourself back up.
And it's that classic thing, right, of detaching yourself, your sense of self, your sense of identity from what you do. And I always like to say, in the entrepreneurial space, there's no such thing as failure. You never fail. You only learn. And the memory of the people who are your ideal client, your ideal audience, is very, very short. Mm-hmm. No one is going to remember that email that didn't land,
exactly,
or that campaign that failed, because no one paid attention to it anyway. So no one's going to it's not going to tarnish your reputation in any way. So you might as well just pick yourself up and learn from it. And one of my coaches, and this is why coaches are so important too, right? Why
oh, yeah.
we we both have coaches,
yes,
is that it helps to keep your inner critic at bay. You know, you have someone that you can bounce ideas off of, that you can learn from. But where was I going with this? I was going somewhere else, which was, you know, detaching your sense of identity, your sense of value from what it is you do, because we're always growing, we're always changing, and you find your voice by using your voice. It's about taking risks and doing things differently and getting out there. I mean, just to bring an example home, recently I hired a copywriter to help me with just a regular campaign, a webinar campaign, a lead funnel that I had just developed around pricing. And we'll talk about pricing and self-worth in a second. And she started putting pictures of like me and my sofa in there. And I was like, wow, I've never really been that transparent with my audience, but it helped me get out of my own fear of self-judgment and, you know, what will people think if they see the space I live in, or, you know, telling stories about my personal life. But people relate to stories. So I think just you and I sitting here talking is like involving everyone else in the conversation of what is it like to become an entrepreneur, to leave the safety of your corporate world or your academic career and go out there and create something out of nothing.
Yeah. And, you know, when you think about, just to go back to what you were saying about separating ourselves from the business. So first of all, that's easy to say and harder to do. So you have to have, like you said, coaches to help you see where you're buying into a story that you are the offer and how it's received versus you have an offer. And it's a value, it's perceived as valuable or not. And people can decline. People can say, I'm sorry, that's not my cup of tea. That's not what I'm looking for. And it's not you, it's your offer. And so that's, coaches are really helpful for that. And I have two coaches right now, but I've had a coach ever since I found coaching. So I just wanted to emphasize that. But the other thing, the inner critic, just to pull in, because I know that's actually what we're both supposed to be talking about, the inner critic. The clue to the critic voice is you are what it's saying to you. It's about your beingness rather than about the activity. So you are an idiot. That was a stupid offer. You're no good at marketing. So it's about you versus, you know, that marketing didn't land. Let's try something different. Totally different, right? So the inner critic, that's a clue that your critic is alive and well, and you're, and that's a voice you can choose to listen to. Or as Deb was pointing to earlier, if you can see that it's the critic voice that's got your attention, put in an interruption. Like for my, one of the things that I find helpful, and I share with women often when I talk about inner critic, is move your body. So if you recognize the critic has you by the ankles, get up out of your chair if you're sitting. Go for a brisk walk. If you can't go for a walk, then just stand up. And you might even want to put one foot up on a footstool in sort of like a queen power pose to shift the energy. And then be notice that the critic voice is just a voice, and you can choose to listen to your wise voice. You don't have to listen to the critic voice. But the clue that the critic has got you by the ankles is it's telling you you are this, rather than, you know, it's your offer or it's your marketing or whatever. It gets at you.
It's very shaming. It's shaming and blaming.
Totally. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And it usually, if you know your critic voice, she's freaking mean. Like she speaks in a way that you would never speak to anyone else. That's something women shared with us quite a bit in our interviews, was that how nasty that critic voice was.
I used to call mine my inner mean girl.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I can swear like truck drivers too, like they're no offense to truck drivers,
yeah.
But they, maybe we shouldn't have said that, but you know, they can be so nasty, right? And use language that's condescending and angry. And but you know, the thing with the critic is it actually, its desire is to keep you safe from embarrassment, humiliation, shame, or experiencing failure. So it is there. If you can hold it that way, it sort of takes some of the animosity out of it. And you can look at it like it's a good thing to be aware of, because it tells you that you're about to put something you care about at risk.
Mm. How do you overcome that inner critic? Because it needs to be, she needs to be replaced with something else. So how Absolutely, do you yeah. work with your clients? Is there a story you can tell us of how you worked with one of your clients, or just
yeah.
how do we move from listening to that inner voice to replacing it with something that's more sane, more true, more encouraging?
Yeah. So recently I was working with an incredibly bright, innovative woman business owner, and she had a vision to do something even bigger, bigger in her definition of bigger, to create this incredible hub of innovation and entrepreneurship. And she just kept stalling on taking action and had a lot of story about why it wasn't possible. And it was odd, because she's taken a ton of risk and faced into some difficulties that most people would have backpedaled and got out of. And she persevered to get through to the other side successfully. So it wasn't that she was new to experiencing adversity or risk. But when we unpacked it, what I heard was her critic voice was saying, "You have no idea what you're doing. You shouldn't be doing this. This is not for you to do. Let someone who's done something like this do it. You aren't the one." It was sort of that kind of critic voice. So we re-examined her care. What does she really care about? What is in this that has heart and meaning to her? And from there, we uncovered it was really about building partnerships and relationships. And she lit up like, you know, she just glowed she was on Zoom, because so I could see her, because obviously we're not able to be together. And she just became animated, smiling, talking about partnerships and relationships. And that is something she excels at. She's gifted in it. It's a strength for her. And when we could identify that, the critic voice disappeared. It no longer was there. And now her whole approach to building this innovation hub is from the lens of building partnerships to take care of what she cares about, which is empowering women through healthy networking relationships and mutual win-win partnerships. So that's an example recently that happened not too long ago, and it energetically changed everything for her too. So you connect with what you care about. And she had to learn her triggers, which was doing something unfamiliar and much on a much bigger scale than she'd done. So that triggered her critic. And then awareness that her energy was tanking and it wasn't serving her to take action to take care of what mattered to her. And so when we could unpack it and see these things, she was able to really shift energy, mood. She's very intentional with the actions she's taking through partnerships to build this hub. And now is out getting stakeholders to support it. So I hope that's a good example.
Yeah, it is a great example. One of the other ways that the inner critic and the not good enough shows up is when it comes to putting a value on our work as entrepreneurs. What is it that I'm charging? And I found that a lot of new entrepreneurs, when they're first starting out, tend to undervalue their mm-hmm. impact. Do you find that as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did it too.
Yeah. You
know, like I said, I started out by doing a lot of pro bono or really low. I even did a group program with a sliding scale, because I wanted to make sure that everybody felt cared for. And that's not that it's a bad thing, but the mm-hmm. sliding scale didn't take care of my needs. So it took care of the women in the group, but it didn't take care of my needs. And I was renting space. I was producing documents. I mean, there was cost to the program. And so we want to obviously be attuned to what the value is that we're bringing to people, and then owning that value. And you're right. I think the critic can actually trip us up there.
Absolutely. Like, who am I? Or some of the voices that happen are, you know, I'm just new to this. I don't mm-hmm. know what I'm doing yet, right? And so instead of bringing into play, you know, lifetimes of delivering value in all your experience that you're bringing to the table, not to mention all the life experience that you've had here. So the inner critic can really take you down. What do you find as the most common and let's just call it the most deadly, just inner dysfunction, what do I want to call it, Amy? I'm not finding the word.
I don't know, but what's coming, let me just share what's coming up for me and see if it's hitting what you're talking about. Who am I to do this? Who am I to launch this? Who am I to charge this? Who am I to do this keynote? Who am I?
Yes.
And I think that to me is what I see play out with my clients. And of course, you know, the work I do is always an extension of my own work I have to do, right? So every time I want to grow again, these inner gremlins, inner critics, the imposter experience, striving for, they all show up again. But at least with awareness, you move through them quicker and you know how to ask for help to help move through them. But yeah, I think it's who am I? Like who am, you know,
who
that,
am I?
Who am I to shine my light so bright?
Yeah. Who am I to build a $1 million business?
Oh, yeah.
Who am I to host an event and have hundreds of people show up?
Who am I to charge that fee for this program?
Yes. Who am I? Yes.
Yeah,
I am hitting all of these right now.
Is that what you're
going to
ask? Because that's what came up. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hitting all of these right now. So, So how do you coach someone out of the who am I into who are you? What do you mean? Why not?
Well, now that would be giving away the secret sauce, Deb.
Oh.
No, I'm kidding. I mean, I'll tell you how I work through it with me, and that would therefore be like, you know, that's pretty much how I work with my clients too, but they're extraordinary women. I just feel so fortunate. I love all my clients and they're just extraordinary, generous, bright women. And yet I often look at them and I'm like, you're amazing. I think you're incredible. And I don't, you know, I'm thinking this in my head as I'm listening to them tell me all these fabulous things they're doing or the challenges they're working through and how they're doing it with such grace and confidence, but they don't see it. They're like, who am I to coach this person who has this title and position, for instance, if I'm working with another coach? And it's like, well, let's talk about, you know, what is it that drew that person to you? And it's really unpacking their unique genius, their strengths, their gifts, the way that they show up that attracts people to them. So that's such a big question to ask, but I think it's, you know, it's helping them see what I see through the questions that I ask, because you know yourself, if you're feeling, who am I to launch this new program? If I tell you, well, who else would do it, Deb? You're amazing. It doesn't sink in for us. We have to have someone help us draw it out of ourselves. So kind of going back to that wise voice, we know what we're capable of. We know our inherent value. We have value by doing nothing, just by being a human being. And then we bring more value by bringing our experiences, our gifts, talents, strengths, genius, whatever you call it, and sparking light to those so that we can share it with others to empower other people through whatever service we offer. So we know inherently we have value, but somewhere along the line, we've lost sight of it. So it's the questions that call up that wise voice in another woman, I think, is the most powerful way through. That was a long answer to your question.
That's okay, because what came up is really the journey to entrepreneurship is the journey to rediscovering who you really are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, we lose sight of who we really are through the experiences that we have through other people and all of their filters. But when you are impacting other people's lives through your work and you can see yourself reflected through their eyes, then you see yourself in a bigger place of value and impact. And then you say, you know, this is who I am. This is me. And that, I think, my friend, is the journey that we've just brought everybody on together with us today is that you have incredible powers within you, right?
Yeah, it's a force, you know, and it's like unleashing the force and the journey of entrepreneurship, because I know your listeners are all either on the journey or looking to jump on it. I can't think of any other experience that calls on you to open up the channel to that life force, to really tap into believing in yourself, to listening to your wise voice, to seeking and capturing that energy that is expressed in service with others to contribute. I just think it's an incredible experience to be able to do that.
It is. It's a gift. And being with you today on Life After Corporate, Amy, has also been a gift. So I want to thank you for gifting us with your wisdom and your experience. I always love your unique point of view of how you tease out some of these concepts. And guys, if you've liked this episode, please go over and listen to The Insight Edge with Amy. There's so much wisdom there, so much goodness, and it's not your typical fare. I mean, the way you break things down, the way you unpack things, as you say, Amy, is really unique to you. And it's always brings insight to me when I listen to your show. How else can people keep in touch with you? What else do you have to offer this community that would be valuable for them?
Well, if they want to hop over to insightedge.ca, so insight, not inside, edge.ca, they could, just by giving me your email, you can have access to a short mini course on power, women in power, and how we can learn. You know, we always hear the phrase own your power, and I always wondered what that meant. And so this little course is sort of my journey to figure out what that means and how you can own your power, step into your power. So they can do that. They can find me on Facebook and LinkedIn.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Amy. It is such a pleasure to know you and to collaborate with you. Let's do this again sometime.
Yeah, totally. It was an absolute joy to be with you. I always feel like we could talk for hours, but your listeners probably might get a bit fed up with us. So thanks for having me.
So we'll say that's it for now, my friend. See
that's
you next
it for
time.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.